This is the Education Gadfly Show.
People think that there's this cabal of, you know, policy wonks and reformers all hanging out together. It's true.
Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming my co-host, a man they call the debt ceiling, Rick Hess.
I like that one, Mike. That's good. I don't know what it means.
I don't know either. Yeah.
But I like that.
Could that be a rock band, do you think?
That busting the debt ceiling would probably be a good band.
Nice. Yep. Raise the roof, Joe. Raise the roof. Nice. So, you know, this week was special, Rick. You know, my wife and kids are out at the beach. I'm joining them today. But it meant that I had a couple of nights where I actually got to be a bachelor again and celebrated with you. Mm-hmm. Had some drinks, a place called Dirty Martini, and then went to the Shake Shack
for the
first time ever.
Much
I like that place.
It was good stuff. It was good stuff.
And my favorite part of that night, one of the favorites is that we're sitting there, you and me and an intern of yours and a couple of friends of yours, and we're, you know, out in the patio on Connecticut Avenue in D.C. And who walks by but John Fullerton of Harvard Graduate School of Education. Totally randomly.
It's a small town.
And he spent
town.
The next 3 hours with us.
Small town.
I know.
Strategic Data Project is going to take a severe blow.
Yes. Well, he had a strategic walking tour of D.C. that led him right to us.
It was great. It's like, John, how you doing? On, Beb.
Yeah.
Love that.
I love it. People think that there's this cabal of, you know, policy wonks and reformers all hanging out together. It's true. Okay. Lots to cover today. Lots to cover. Let's be honest. It has finally started. The news has started to trickle now with the summer really kicking in high gear. But that
Dude,
doesn't mean
we're like 3
topics.
Weeks from school start. Summer
okay,
kicking
well.
In.
Oh, well, that's a good sign. It only took this long to get into the summer before the education news dried up. All right, but we actually do have some interesting stuff to talk about today. We'll hear Amber's research minute. We've got Chris Tassoni's dollars and cents. So let's get started. Daniela, pardon the gadfly.
Okay. Question number one. This past Saturday, the Save Our Schools March came to D.C. with big names like Diane Ravitch and Jonathan Kozol giving speeches. What does the rally and the group that spearheaded it actually mean for ed policy?
I mean, the chanting was deafening, Rick. You must have heard it from your house in Arlington.
You know what? I was in Key West, so what was going on. So I didn't get to be here for it. But I got to say, for all of the fuss and the fact that there's 3.4 million teachers out there, the fact that they got 5,000 people total, even with big stars like Jonathan Kozol.
Well, and real stars like Matt Damon.
And Matt Damon is, I got to say, if I was them, they'd probably just feel real sheepish about now.
I mean, Daniela made this point yesterday. I mean, if you had to estimate, how many teachers live within an hour's drive of Washington, D.C.? I mean, tens of thousands,
Well, we
right?
know DCPS alone employs 4,000, right? Montgomery County and Fairfax
exactly.
between them probably have 25,000, 30,000. So, yeah, I mean, that means they couldn't even get, you know, they probably couldn't even get 5% of local teachers to show up on a summer Saturday.
All right. All
to save our schools. What does that say about where teachers are in terms of saving our schools?
Well, and the organizers said, look, teachers are, they're broke and they're demoralized and that's why they didn't come.
Yeah. You know, there's got to be 30,000 teachers who live in a metro accessible location. Easy.
Right. And they're on vacation. All right. But the look, you know, some of the concerns that they raised, I think, are legitimate. Here's what's hard to know. You know, the concerns were that our schools are being turned into test prep factories. And it's really hard to know, you know, if that's true or not. I mean, you hear anecdotes. I don't know a good way of being able to tell if out of the 100,000 schools we have out there, how many really have adopted what would be considered an unhealthy focus on testing. But I would assume it's probably a lot more than mm-hmm. a few. And I think that's a serious problem, mm-hmm. you know. And so I don't want to disregard these voices out there. I think that, and the question is, what do you do about it?
Well, I mean, the problem, yeah, that's right. And because I'm fully sympathetic with some of these issues that have been raised and with the mania right now, as far as how we're proceeding with teacher evaluation and mm-hmm. pay. So, I mean, I think they have legitimate issues and concerns. Problem is when they have Kozol up there as somebody who's speaking for them, when they have this incarnation of Diane speaking in ways which I think are not particularly empathetic to the concerns that the reformers are trying to address, what they basically do is make themselves look like you know, refuseniks, rather than people who are engaged in a, you know, respectful debate about how do we do this.
And there's so much confusion about the issue of choice in charter schools because, you know, I would strongly suspect that if you want to find schools that have not gone into the testing mania, you're going to find a lot of that in charter schools because parents and teachers have chosen those schools to get away from this traditional system that's gone caught up in all of this. And yet, a lot of these folks are dead set against any form of choice. I mean, I really, you know, other people have argued that the solution to the testing stuff is to have choice because parents and teachers don't like testing. And so that balances the things out a little bit. If you have schools that have to attract teachers and attract parents, I think that's one way to solve this problem. Mm. Okay, topic number two.
Okay. Art Levine wrote a piece in Valerie Stouse's Answer Sheet blog this week, reminding states that they had the power to shutter low-quality ed schools in order to streamline teacher training. What's the likelihood this will actually happen?
Well, you know, he has a good point, which is that right now we don't need as many teachers as we usually do. I mean, teachers are graduating, they're not getting jobs. And so he says this is the perfect time for states to become much more selective about who can become a teacher. And one good way of doing that is to close down the low-quality programs that are out there. You know, NCTQ is trying to put a spotlight on these low-quality programs with their big nationwide effort. Do you think that's a chance? Are any state policymakers going to listen to that and say, hey, yeah, let's take the opportunity to go after some of these bad ed schools?
I mean, it's funny. I mean, I would like to think that, you know, in states that are looking at tough budgets right now, and frankly, after the debt ceiling deal, you know, the implications for federal aid to the states are that states are now looking at deepened budget holes for fiscal 2013, 2014. I'd like to think that some of the Republicans and Tea Party legislatures would absolutely look there. I don't think any of them probably read Valerie Strauss, so Art might want to think about another way to communicate with them.
He should come on the show.
There you go.
Yeah, because I mean, I think we have a large Tea Party following. Don't you think so, Rick?
I don't think Fordham is necessarily the belle of the ball with the Tea Party nowadays. All right.
You know, I should say that Art Levine's piece had some dumb things to say. It seemed to imply that while you close down these low-performing programs, you should also get rid of things like Teach for America, which are heading in the wrong direction, you know, by opening the gates too wide to these people who haven't gone through ed school.
Yeah, Teach for America keeps bringing in people who, you know, what would be...
Yeah, I can't even begin to explain it. I was trying to explain this argument. I can't even quite. I mean, look, we should ratchet up our expectations like Teach for America does.
I mean, he's concerned that TFA is letting people into teaching who couldn't get into the nation's 1,100th best ed school. I mean, this is where he's coming from.
Well, you know this line that because they don't have the other training that they're not as qualified. Well, whatever. But but bottom line, people, if you're listening and you have any say in it, close bad ed schools.
That'd be a nice thing to do.
If you not need to know who they are, we can give you a list.
There's like 7 or 8 times as many ed schools as there are law schools or medical schools. So you can cut out half the ed schools and half the teacher training. Excuse me. There's 7 or 8 times as many teacher training programs as there are law schools or med schools.
Yeah.
So go ahead, close half your state's teacher training programs, and you'll probably still have 4 times as many as you have law schools or med schools.
Okay. Topic number 3, Daniela.
Okay. Missouri passed a law banning teacher-student friendship on Facebook. Is that smart policy or stifling to innovation?
Well, the less time teachers spend on Facebook, the better. Mm-hmm. So I'm all for it.
See, now, Rick, first of all, here's Mr. Innovation, entrepreneurialism, and you're not even on Facebook, man. Oof. Not to mention Twitter, though last night I did tweet many of the things that Rick said, which got some of the best response I've gotten in a long time. That's what people want to hear about. But is it really true that you cannot write if your knees are covered?
It is true. I find myself very, like, stifled.
But just the knees, right?
Just
please
the knees.
Tell us that you're at home.
No, I
you're
can write
in
that's
shorts.
Why, that's why I wear shorts. Sure.
Okay. No, but you're not writing about, naked when as, you're like as a regular.
No, God, no.
What about that? Cutoff jeans? If you had, you know, holes in your knees, would that work?
You know what? If I was a fashion model in 1978, that might work, but I'm not.
Okay, right, back to Missouri.
Yeah. You should be totally against this thing in Missouri, okay? Whatever you think about whether or not teachers and kids should be friends on Facebook, okay, why is the state legislature getting involved in something like this?
I mean, I'd like to think it's part of a broader policy which says teachers should spend time doing reading or thinking rather than being on Facebook doing posting and updates.
There must have been some scandal in Missouri where some young teacher hooked up with a kid and the romance was budding on Facebook or something like that.
Where
right?
policy so, always comes from.
All right. So I understand that's an issue.
And, no, I'm with
and,
you.
And, I mean, I can understand. Like, schools do have to figure this out. I mean, this is a real issue. And there's, I'm sure there's benefits to being friends with a student on Facebook if you're helping them with their homework or you're, but are you spying on them? I mean, it's complicated, but I don't want the state legislator deciding this.
No, I'm with you on that too. It's you know, there's, I mean, but this right, this is what we always do, right? There is somebody who does something stupid, so we pass a policy or a law, and then over time, the 117 accumulated policies and laws around Facebook become one more hugely frustrating thing for, you know, teachers and school leaders to deal with.
All right, that's all the time we've got for Pardon the Gadfly. Thank you, Daniela.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Rick. Now it's time for everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
Amber, have you made the mistake of going out with Rick on the town lately?
I have not made it lately, but I have made it. Like, my entire doctoral career was spent at a bar called Martin's, where he would have the entire class over at Martin's afterwards. So many a night. Yes.
I love it. Did it take you extra time to get through your graduate program as a result?
No, but we had a more productive class at Martin's probably than in the class. Yeah, so that's interesting.
I can imagine that is true. All right. What are we talking about today?
So
Amber?
We have a new study out by Will Dobby. We're looking at TFA. We looked at TFA last week. We're going to look at it again this week. He examines whether information collected by TFA in its hiring process predicts student outcomes. So basically he looks at student achievement data, administrative data for students and teachers in New York City. He merges those data with admissions records from roughly 400 math and English TFA teachers from the 2007 to 2009 cohorts. The application process uses assessment, essays, group activities, recommendations, sample teaching lessons that measure a variety of hard and soft skills. In the end, Dobby controls for demographic variables, takes precautions for sorting effects. I won't get too in the weeds here, but anyway, he did do some good stuff in terms of controlling variables. He finds that in math, students with TFA teachers who scored high on achievement, leadership, and perseverance did better than their peers. TFA's measures of critical thinking, organizational ability, motivation, and respect for others prove not to be significant. In English, the relationships were all weak or not significant at all. And when they examined the second year of a teacher's teaching career, these relationships were no longer statistically significant. So, in short, it's good we're trying to capture some of these soft skills, but clearly we've got a long way to go.
So this is interesting. So basically, Teach for America has a hypothesis about what's going to make somebody an effective teacher. And based on that hypothesis, they then have a model to decide who gets in and who doesn't get in. And they've been refining this over time. So I think perseverance, actually that's been around for a while. I think they recently added something related but a little different called grit.
Oh, grit? Oh, I didn't see that one.
You know,
okay.
It is even newer probably than this study.
Okay.
So they start to try to figure out what is it that really makes somebody stick, or what is it that makes somebody maybe drop out or not do well. So when he's looking at these data, though, we're really looking at all of these teachers got accepted to Teach for America.
That's right.
It's just some of them scored really
higher
high on these
lower
issues and some did not.
Right.
So leadership, perseverance,
and achievement. Yeah, and the other one just kind of fell out.
Yeah.
Only in math, which is kind of strange too.
So for example, achievement, do we know how they measured that? Is that just the teacher's GPA, stuff like that?
Yeah, it didn't actually say, or if it did, I didn't see it. It's a mix of assessments, so presumably, you know, more than one.
Right.
I mean, what else could it be? ACT.
No, but this makes sense. I mean, you know, and of course, Teach for America has a book out called Teaching as Leadership. And, you know, I mean, that's not crazy to think about. You know, the teacher's job is to lead their students towards higher achievement, and some of those same leadership abilities that you would use with other people work well with kids too.
I mean, I guess these are just like scales. I mean, have you ever seen any of these measures, what they look like?
I think you're right that they're scales, and then you probably combine them all together.
Yeah.
you know, I remember about 10 years ago, Dan Goldhaber had a paper that said, look, even if we look at things that do relate to achievement, like teachers' GPA or their scores on these mm-hmm. tests, at most, these things amount to maybe 3% mm-hmm. of what makes a right. teacher great. There's 97% of the stuff that we don't understand,
right.
you know, how to predict. And so, which is a problem yeah. if you're trying to figure out how to hire the right person at the front end. And so now we're maybe whittling away at that percentage.
Yeah.
That
and I think other districts and school systems are catching on. You know, it was just TFA was this kind of weird, yeah. you know, really where they're looking at this. And now you see, you know, traditional districts more and more kind of trying to do some of these things and interviewing. A friend mm-hmm. of mine just got a teaching job and she was telling me the same thing. They were asking her some odd questions, you know, but it was trying to really get at do you get discouraged? You know, do you really think all kids learn? And, you know, are you really going to stick it out? And and she felt like, gosh, I'm getting a personality test here, you know.
And aren't there's a couple of these on the market, right? Haberman, Gallup, right. I think, has one that try to tease out some of these
That's
attributes
right.
mm-hmm. And almost it's almost personality features of people.
Yeah, that's right. Which makes sense. I mean, that's the kind of the general workplace, you know, kind of personality characteristics you look for in any job. You know, can you work with others? You know, do you collaborate? Are you, you know, are you going to stick to it when you're challenged?
Yeah. And even though, say, for example, learn, you know, do you respect others? That may not relate to achievement, but you still right. certainly want teachers who respect others.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have time, but there was one little finding that said teachers who scored high on the respect scale, their kids tended to have fewer behavior infractions. Hmm. So it's kind of interesting.
Very interesting. Well, yeah. This is great. This is exactly the kind of research that we need. Very mm-hmm. pragmatic, helpful. What's the song that goes along with this?
So since teachers need to be supporting their students, we have Lean On Me by Bill Withers.
Sometimes in our lives, we all have pain. We all have sorrow. But if we are wise, we know that there's always tomorrow. Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm gonna need somebody to lean on. Please swallow your pride.
I love that song, Lean On Me. It reminds me of a great movie, Lean On Me, too. I always remember that scene, they're walking over the railroad tracks. Anyways, now it's time for Chris Tassoni's Dollars and Cents.
This is Dollars and Cents, where we
make sense
of education finance.
On Tuesday, the North Carolina Court of Appeals ruled that a group of charter schools has no legal right to apply for money from their county's capital outlay funds in order to purchase buildings or buses. I think this is great news. Don't get me wrong, the charter schools that sued clearly have a moral right to this money. Traditional schools have been on a construction boom in recent years. Billions of dollars have been spent in North Carolina in the past decade to keep up with significant enrollment increases. Charter schools deserve a piece of this pie too, so that they can provide their students with top-notch facilities. But the laws in North Carolina don't back up this moral right to fair funding with any legal rights for charters. In fact, the court found that using county capital funds for school construction would have required the charters to comply with a huge range of onerous regulations, including the exciting-sounding Energy Guidelines for School Design and Construction, and a review of construction plans by the state superintendent. No doubt she's an expert general contractor. The court seems to have ruled fairly based on the law, and did charters a favor by declaring them to be exempt from school construction rules. But this result is also a challenge to the North Carolina legislature. Step up and provide a funding mechanism for charter schools to get public dollars for school construction just like traditional schools. The kids deserve it.
Interesting. Chris Bucks coming in. Yes, a little counterintuitive, but I see your point is that these kinds of issues shouldn't be settled through the courts. This has got to be something for the legislature. I would point out, you said that the charter schools have a right to top-notch facilities. I think many charters around the country would settle for something much less than that. You know, something a little better than a storefront. Yes, that many charters around the country have to do with a lot less than top-notch.
This is true. You know, I worked in charter school lending with the District of Columbia last summer during my internship. And the district, this is a struggle for schools here as well. There's a handful of schools with really top-notch facilities, KIPP DC being one of them. And it's a fantastic thing to see, you know, kids in Ward 7 and 8, some of the poorest in DC, going to a school staffed with excellent teachers and excellent facilities for all the activities they have. But it's sadly a rare thing for even the highest performing charters in the country.
Okay. Well, that is all the time we've got this week. Till next week, I'm Mike Petrilli of the Education Gadfly Show, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.